Fun fact, you can fit entire sentences into the pauses the characters in The French Lieutenant's Woman leave before they say the word woman. Here, watch, I'll show you.
The French Lieutenant's
Woman was the number one movie in America.
Oh.
Meryl, update your language.
The number one movie in America. Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, I'm Sean Collier. I am here with two people who actually wanted the ice cream. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Cheech and Chong.
Got it. No, I did not want the ice cream.
You didn't want the ice cream.
Do I look like Joe Biden over here?
Camila Adams wanted the ice cream.
Yes, I wanted the ice cream. I always want the ice cream.
I keep... In my head, I have a good one of those ready to go, and I don't bother to come up with the one because the good one I have ready to go is for Mommy Dearest, and I forgot to do it. I meant to say during Mommy Dearest, I'm here with two people who know where to find the booze and the boys, which would have been great, and yeah. I said something else in Mommy Dearest, and that is like sticking in my, but maybe now I've said it, I've purged it.
Good. Yeah, you've gotten it out of your system.
Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams was last time. We gave it a 49. That is not our most average result. Our most average result remains The Deep, which was a perfect 50.
Yep.
That is the average movie. More average, Top Gun was 50 and a third. The Sum of All Fears was 50 and three quarters. And The Toy was equally average in the other direction at 51. Those are our shruggiest shrugs. And now, the same year. Hi, this is a 1981 podcast.
Yeah, apparently.
I'll cover it for Camila and I. We had never seen this movie and were only vaguely aware that there was a movie with this name.
Yeah, I wasn't even vaguely aware that there was a movie of this name.
Robin?
I have seen this movie before because, as we said last week, it is a Robin movie. Although, I do have to say, so... It's a Robin movie because it was nominated for a bunch of Oscars and has Meryl Streep in it. Mm. But actually, this genre of Oscar bait is my least favorite genre of Oscar.
Oh, really?
Bait. Yeah.
Because I just kind of felt like the Oscar bit and Meryl Streep have probably no reason into why I thought it was a Robin movie.
Oh, really? Was it because of the love business?
Yeah. Like, yeah. It just felt like the vibe was like that was what you kind of liked, that Victorian bit.
So that's the thing is I don't really like the... Rich people in the past is a genre that I have limited interest in.
Same.
However, it often overlaps with people who love each other who can't be together. My favorite plot.
Star-crossed lovers.
So, and I had seen this before. I watched this when I had some episode of Hypomania and made a spreadsheet of everything that got a major Oscar nomination going back to 1970. I have, in a subsequent episode of Hypomania, made it all the way back to the start. But at first I was like, just the last 50-ish years. And this was one of the first movies that I watched when I was like, I'm doing it. New project.
Oh, wow.
So it was not super strong in my memory for that reason, I think, that it was like I probably watched a ton of Oscar stuff right that week. The one thing that really stuck out with me was like the structure of this. And I remember when I saw Asteroid City, I kept being like, oh, it's like The French Lieutenant's Woman. And no one on earth knew what I was talking about. So I feel like Tony pulled this so that someone on earth would know what I was talking about.
We're glad to help. I thought it was a Robin movie because it is clearly a movie for grownups.
Yes.
Copyright AARP. In a way that almost has stopped existing. In fact, that nothing illustrates this better than the trailer. So here's the trailer.
It has been recognized as a masterpiece of modern literature. It has given the world a woman and a love story so mysterious and unique, only an actress of the most special talents could portray them on the screen. Meryl Streep in The French Lieutenant's Woman.
I knew it was ordained that I should never marry an equal, so I married Shane. I am the French Lieutenant's whore.
One woman in two love stories.
I must see you.
That would be very difficult.
One before the cameras.
I gave myself to him.
One behind the scenes.
You know what I say in the graveyard scene?
One in a world where freedom is forbidden.
You are a cunning, wicked creature.
One in a world without rules.
I want you so much.
He just had me. My only happiness is when I sleep. When I wake, the nightmare begins.
Her torture had become her delight.
Meryl Streep, Jeremy Irons, in a Carol Rice film. Written for the screen by Harold Pinter. Based on the novel by John Fowles. The French Lieutenant's Woman.
That, like, screams, you are a smart grown-up with a respectable home. You have read books.
Yes, you've read this great modern novel.
Right.
Own wooden furniture that does not have...
Heavy
wooden furniture that does not have nicks on it.
Right.
Or ashtrays.
And there are knickknacks that have been passed down from generations on your mantle. And you call it a mantle. Yes.
Like 90% of the time, I'm fine with that. I am, you know, I don't travel to go to... What do grown-ups do? I don't travel to go to the Metropolitan Opera. I go to WrestleMania. Right.
I like how you looked at me. Like, what do grown-ups do?
What do grown-ups
do? Just because I have a kid, don't make me a grown-up.
But I do worry that, like... For the same reason that there was a New York Times story this week about how NPR is probably going to die. It's like, is the adulthood that our parents had just gone?
I think it might be. And I don't know what to attribute that to. Like, it's not like there's more, or maybe there's just more stuff for us to hang on to. And for example, I'm currently writing an essay about New Kids on the Block and
beautiful
and my love for them. And I talk about, like, there was a chunk of time where, like, they disappeared. It was like 14, 15 years. We didn't hear anything musically from them. And then they come back. And it's like the perfect time for the Gen X grown ass women who were loving them when we were teenagers and stuff. And now it's like, OK, I'm reliving my childhood again.
Nostalgia cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's where it is. And I think we're the generation now. We're like, we're not ready to give it up as much as our parents were.
I don't know how much it's on us and how much it's on the people selling it to us.
I want to blame the people selling it to us. But I mean, it's Ready Player One culture, right? It's just like everything in culture right now is so like old, right? It's like, oh, we got to make more Ghostbusters movies, you know?
it is, but it's the idea specifically that if you have a thing, now your job is to get everyone's money for that thing forever. Like when I started watching wrestling was aimed at kids. And even 7 years later it was aimed at teens. Right. And now it's aimed at everybody, but with a dedicated focus on keeping people in. And you could say that about comic book movies, you could say that about video games, you could say that about any of the stuff that there is adult fandom for that has kind of supplanted, I will now read the acclaimed book.
Well, it's also
with my pipe.
Listen, yeah, well now we're adults and have money.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, like it's sure aimed at the kid, aim stuff at kids. Parents will buy the shit for them. But aim Ninja Turtle movies to adults and they're going to go buy the t-shirts, the Funkos, the, you know.
And they're going to take their kids.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
No.
Right.
And like, I don't want to be like, mar, 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 mar. In my day, we didn't have remake wolves, which
we sure did.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You were just talking about King Kong.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
But I do think that the money thing is like they just stopped making money on things like the French Lieutenant's Woman. Like, I can't believe this was a Nomia. Like, that just blows my mind.
Probably.
I do think there's a market for this. Yeah. I just think that they are ignoring it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I also think maybe these are just going directly to Hallmark and Lifetime. Or not Lifetime, but maybe Hallmark.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Or limited series.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Books get adapted into limited series now.
That's a good point, because I think the other thing with a lot of this stuff is, and I only half know both of your habits when I'm not talking to you. So I don't, if this is you, I don't blame you specifically. And you have a kid, which one of you has a child, which changes the entire equation. I think part of it also is, grown-ups now don't go places.
I do not.
Right. I think that a lot of adults, particularly adults with kids, are so nested. that anything that is meant to be served to adults is packaged for the home. It is not packaged for movies. It is not packaged for events. It is not people.
That makes sense.
I've said it before. I know people who live 8 miles to town and from town and can say to me, I haven't been to Pittsburgh in a year, because they don't go to things. And I think that, you know, you can turn the French Lieutenant's Woman into an HBO series because that's where the adults are.
Yeah.
But you can't put it to the movie theater because the adults stop going there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
This is existentially depressing. Let's talk about this romance movie.
Hey, we're going to talk about Challengers later. Movie for grown-ups in theaters today.
Did you see Challengers?
I'm going to see it tonight.
Okay. It's weird because I said to fellow Pittsburgh Film Critics Association, this is for You Can't Handle the Truth. Shut me up.
Sorry.
What happens in this movie, Camila?
Well, yes. Oh, bloody hell. Good luck, guys.
Go.
Meryl Streep is playing Anna, who's playing Sarah. Jeremy Irons is playing Mike, who's playing Charles. Mike and Anna are having an affair while playing a couple, Charles and Sarah, who are having an affair. Also, got it? Charles gives Sarah some money and sends her away and continues to send her money while she's gone and goes to see her. She might be sick or something, I can't tell. But they do some dramatic lovemaking after 45 minutes of him disrobing. Charles breaks off his engagement with Sarah and Sarah disappears. Charles gets sued by his ex-fiance, which I didn't know was a thing you can do that, and goes to look for Sarah. After 3 years, she turns up and is super salty about it. Basically, she has to do some soul searching, but they ended up together. In the real world, Mike is being a menace, calling Anna's house, telling her he loves her while her husband is like 2 feet away, kissing on her at a cookout at his house as well. Once Mike and Anna finish filming, Anna's like, okay, we had fun, peace, leaving the wrap party without saying goodbye. Mike is devastated.
Sure.
I think you did a pretty good job there.
It was so, just watching this movie, it was just kind of like, it was a chore for me.
Yeah, I felt a lot of times watching this. Poor Sean and Camila. I thought maybe Sean would maybe like it.
It was fine.
Okay, yeah. I was like, you're a theater nerd.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just that the whole Victorian era is just not for me. Like the cadence, the melodrama, the use of 14 words when 5 and do, like the status of women. Like it's just, yeah, it's a lot. So I kept coming out when they were going back into Sarah and whatever, Charles, I guess. Yeah. And so I would like fall out and then come back when they were in modern times. And I don't know.
I think that's how I watched it the first time. Mm. I think that this time I was in the right mood for the other stuff. And I also think that the reason that I like this movie is because the interplay between the two timelines makes the melodrama. It's the same thing as Asteroid City. I'm like, the weirdness of Wes Anderson's style works the best when you are saying, hey, everybody, this is a fake story, right? So saying, hey, we're making this movie makes all of the times that they're way too dramatic feel work. Like work. Yeah, it feels like, yes, yeah, right? Yeah. I'm on board. It works for me.
It's funny because when I hit play and then, they started off with the clapboard and all that stuff. I was like, did I hit a behind the scenes? Or is this their trailer? I don't know.
Yes.
I didn't realize it was a movie within a movie.
I can't get over how pretty parts of this movie are. Like, that was something I definitely did not remember. That and that fucking shot on that fucking seawall and her big, beautiful cloak. I'm just like, the power of cinema.
Oh, it had that. It had, it had nice, fancy times melodrama in the past and good contrasting drama in the present. And I think I probably didn't pay enough attention to it because you definitely appreciated it on a deeper level. I don't know. I have nothing really bad to say about it other than the fact that it's a little wee bit slow. And we'll get into the structure because it comes up in the Faxy segment. But I do think it felt more like, it's like ASMR for your grown-up brain.
Yeah.
It's just like, here's some content to wash over you and make you feel good about taking in this good, nice content.
Right. Because this is theater. This is a film.
It's like eating a salad.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
This
with
movie.
With oil and vinegar, not with ranch dressing.
Right.
Oil and vinegar, and it's a lot of thinly chopped vegetables, so they feel crunchy, but aren't as satisfying as if they were actually croutons.
Yes. Very good. Yeah.
Well played.
I think
they should put that on the poster.
Yeah, exactly. The French Lieutenant's Woman was released September 18th, 1981. It was the 23rd number one movie of the year. We do not have detailed info. As I mentioned last time, this is the Wikipedia page says it won the weekend with TBD dollars, about $1 million. And that was a month later. It won the weekend of October 18th. It was just a very slow week. This was new. It was out. Allegedly, it won that weekend. It is possible it didn't, but as far as we know, it did. It is definitely the only weekend it even maybe sort of won. Paternity with Burt Reynolds won the prior three after ending Mommy Dearest's 1 week reign.
I was going to say, I feel like we just talked about that movie I'd never heard of.
We have now.
Now I have heard of it.
Bookended Paternity. Halloween 2, which we have also done an episode on, won the following week. Box Office Mojo has this making $26.8 million. That would be 27th for the year. There's like a Box Office Mojo knockoff site called The Numbers, which has some different data from somewhere else. It has it a little bit lower, around 22 million in the 30s of that year. It was a decent hit. This was not just Oscar bait that made a couple million and then went away. Like, mm-hmm. This is a movie that people went to see. Speaking of which, expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Okay. So Meryl Streep was nominated for Best Actress. That was her first Best Actress nomination. She had just recently won Best mm-hmm. Supporting Actress. Mm-hmm. Third nomination overall.
She lost to
Katharine Hepburn, getting her fourth and final Oscar. I'm going to guess that Harold Pinter was nominated for the screenplay.
Yes.
Because he's Harold Pinter.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's good.
And he lost to...
Who wrote On Golden Pond?
That person.
Yes.
I just wrote down On Golden Pond.
Correct.
Three more.
Cinematography.
No.
Rude.
Yeah.
Costume design.
Yes.
Okay. Did that win?
No. None of them won. 0 for 5.
Oh. And art direction.
Yes. You're missing one.
Oh. Editing?
Correct.
Okay.
It lost art direction and editing to Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it lost costume design to Chariots of Fire.
What? Mm. Come on.
They gotta get a lot of shorts. So many shorts. Cut them just right.
Come on.
Like, just a bunch of guys in track.
Okay. I mean, like, I do think that menswear is underrepresented.
Yeah. Was a lot of calf porn?
Yes. Like, obviously, there should be more costume wins for menswear, but mm-hmm. Everything that Ernestina wore, I want to rip off of her body and put it on mine.
Robin needs a bodice.
Yes.
Meryl Streep did not spend the season empty-handed. She didn't win the BAFTA and the Golden Globe.
Oh, so interesting. Yeah. And she would win First Best Actress Oscar the next year.
Sophie's yes.
Choice.
This was choice. Bookended by wins. Her previous nomination was supporting for Kramer versus Kramer, which she won. Her next nomination was for lead for Sophie's Choice, which she won. Her first overall was, I'm sure you know,
for her first nomination,
yeah.
Deer Hunter.
Was supporting actress for the
I'm
Deer Hunter.
I'm pretty sure I could name all 21 Meryl Streep nominations.
There's some weird ones in the middle there.
Yeah, can I do it? We don't have that much to say. Let me see if I can do this. All right, hang on.
Hold on, let me get the list.
One time she had to do it on a late night show, and she named one, A Cry in the Dark, and they were like, nope. And she was like, well, why not? I'll cut that in.
Cry in the Dark, maybe?
No.
Why? Why?
But she was nominated for A Cry in the Dark. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Deer Hunter, Kramer versus Kramer, French Lieutenant's Woman, Sophie's Choice, Out of Africa, Ironweed. Oh, Silkwood. I forgot Silkwood.
Mm-hmm.
Cry in the Dark,
mm-hmm.
Postcards from the Edge, Bridges of Madison County, One True Thing, Music of the Heart, Adaptation, Devil Wears Prada, Julie and Julia, The Iron Lady, Into the Woods, Florence Foster Jenkins, The Post.
You are missing two.
Can I get years?
2009.
Julia and Julia.
No,
oh, The Doubt. Doubt. Just Doubt.
And
it's 2008.
Okay. 2014. So a 2013 film.
August, Osage County.
That's it.
All right.
Isn't that impressive?
Well done.
And yet only the three wins. The two
only?
We...
Only?
But when you have that many, you know better than I do if any of these she should have won. I mean, there's a lot of iconics, like losing to Kathy Bates in Misery, and I would say Susan Sarandon in Dead Man Walking, and Boys Don't Cry, and Helen Mirren in The Queen. I mean, she could have beat Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side. We'd like if she had, in retrospect. Or
yeah, that creates a chain of events where Sandra Bullock wins for Gravity.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kate Blanchett doesn't talk about how great Woody Allen is in the year 2014.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But have we talked about how Meryl Streep and I were born in the same hospital?
No.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. It's like, this is something I need to talk about anytime Meryl Streep comes up. I also wanted to share that when I lived in Cape Town, somebody who's on my improv team was also from that part of New Jersey.
Oh, really?
And I know, it's such a small world. Oh. And I remember him being like, yeah, you know, I was born at Overlook Hospital. And then we said in unison, like Meryl Streep.
She has not been nominated since The Post in 2018. That is her longest drought.
Oh, interesting.
She has not been nominated in the last five ceremonies. That has never happened since she began. No, nor Mamma Mia. Here we go again. What else? The book is from 1969. The author's name is John Fowles. It does not have the modern part. The modern stuff is not in the novel, which might be why it feels a little thin. Instead, there is a metatextual narrator talking to you about the story and then later talking to the characters about the story they're in. And it has three endings as the narrator keeps going, or maybe would you prefer it went like this, which they refer to when they're at that rap party. Right. They're like, which of the endings are you going with? That's because the book, The French Lieutenant's Woman, does have happy endings and sad endings. So,
and this is why people were like, it's unfilmable. Which,
no, you just had to do something different.
Whenever people say that about books, I'm always like, oh, someone here is challenge accepted.
Right, yeah, yes. Maybe just work a little harder. Yeah.
Or just film a little bit of it. Or, I still can't believe, and because Mary Beth's reading this right now, and I don't even
French
know if
Lieutenant's
she
knows. Woman?
No. I don't even know if she knows this. The Dark Tower, like the famously, this is completely unfilmable, which they just didn't say what they were doing, After everyone went to see the movie, they were like, yep, the movie's a sequel to the entire series. Takes place after the last one.
Wow.
So that you could do that. Yeah. You could do anything you
that
want.
That makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. I thought I had a thought, but then
I have things to say about Harold Pinter.
I have several more facts, but but because this came up here, I wanted way more of the modern stuff or none of it.
So, yes, I agree. I don't want none of it, obviously. I explained why I think that the structure works for me, but I do want there to be more there, especially about Meryl's character. Yeah. I felt like, you know, like the story in The French Lieutenant's Woman is so much about this, you know, enigma of a woman, right? Yeah. Why don't they then map that on to this famous actress who's constantly, you know, there's so much there with how actors' true personality is sometimes unknowable,
right?
It seems like there is so much that they could have done parallel-wise that they just didn't bother with.
Yeah. Not that I wanted this to be 3 hours long, but...
I mean, I'd take it.
Like, like Camila, I felt a little more activated in the modern scenes.
I think we could have, like, chopped up... Like, the Victorian scenes were a little long and drawn out, so the point is where you would just kind of, like, forget... That, oh yeah, this isn't a real movie. Like, it's too many hoops that my brain was trying to jump through as I was watching this.
And especially, I don't know why I gravitated towards, they're out on a date, and it's like, for romance, let's smoke cigarettes while lying on our backs on a thin blanket covering sharp rocks.
England.
Is that what they're doing over there? They're just uncomfortable and
I mean
coughing
there
all the time.
Yeah,
I was
their
there.
Food.
I was there for 48 hours.
Okay.
If you're wondering, Harold Pinter wrote lots of screenplays.
I've been waiting every day when I'm like, "What am I going to watch today?" One of the things that's on my list is Betrayal, and I am watching it soon.
I wondered how many, because I associate him as the theater guy, the serious, thinky-talky theater guy. And I didn't know that he has tons of screenplays. Most of them just weren't big hits outside of the UK. Mm. Betrayal is probably the closest. The Last Tycoon, The Pumpkin Eater, The Servant. The last one was Sleuth in 2007 with Michael Caine and Jude Law.
They remade Sleuth with Michael Caine and Jude
Law,
I guess.
Or it's a different
Michael
movie
Caine
called
was
Sleuth.
In the original Sleuth. I bet it's Michael Caine playing Laurence Olivier's role. And Jude Law playing Michael Caine's role.
That'd be cute.
Yeah, that sounds like something they would do.
So he's done plenty of things. His plays are a bridge too far even for me. Like, it's just, how long can we talk without saying much?
I think this is the perfect example of what kind of air quotes smart I am, right? Yeah. Where I obviously know who I'm aware of Harold Pinter as a playwright. And I know that he is so famous as a playwright that there is a word, Pinteresque. And then I'm like, what the fuck does, like, I know nothing about what that means. And I texted my friends who care about theater. And then at some point I go, wait, is he the pauses guy?
Yeah.
And then I put the movie on and I was like, oh yeah, fuck yeah, he's the pauses guy. But I also want to direct everybody to one of the best Wikipedia pages I've ever read, Characteristics of Harold Pinter's Works, which is basically excerpts of Harold Pinter complaining about being perceived.
What?
Like, at some point, somebody, because, okay, like, one of the phrases that people use to describe Pinterest things is the comedy of menace. I don't know what that means. Again, air quotes smart. Mm. And he said, my plays are about the weasel under the cocktail cabinet. And then, like, years later, somebody was
Oh, that sentence that makes sense. Exactly. Yes, I understand now.
But someone made it make sense to them, and they were like, so would you say that this thing in your play is an example of the weasel? And he was like, why would anyone ever say that? And it was like, sir, you were the person who said it.
Sir, do you have dementia? Like, yes.
He truly seems like such a little bitch in a way that I fell in love with him through the course of reading that.
No, yeah, I'm glad we have those figures, and I'm glad that they are moving parts of the culture that I choose not to deal with forward. This was a very long development. Basically, since the book came out, various directors were attached, including Sidney Lumet. Do you say Lumet?
No, it's Lumet.
Lumet. And Miloš Forman, and a few treatments of the screenplay. Pinter was actually last after it was in production for a while. Other people attached for Mike. Robert Redford was close.
Too hot.
As is, was Richard Chamberlain. For Sarah, Fowles, the author, wanted Helen Mirren.
Huh.
Mm.
Maybe too hot.
I don't know.
Super...
She would have been in her physical prime then. Charlotte Rampling and Gemma Jones also considered. And since you brought it up, that rock wall thing was very dangerous. No one would let Meryl Streep walk on it. It is not Meryl in the long shots on the rock wall. It is an art director. And then they sprayed some mist in a soundstage for the close-ups.
Fucking looks great.
Yeah, worked out perfectly well. I don't know if everyone knows this. It is a law. If you say the word whore in acting, it must have gravel in it or you broke the law. You must say whore. And everyone in this movie obeyed the law.
Yes.
It's
I felt kind of dumb, especially because I have seen this before, when Ernestina was like, they have a different ruder name for her, that I didn't figure out what it meant.
we needed to walk by village man number three before we learned about her true reputation. I don't know, is he just into her because she's around and she fucks? Like, yes. is he like,
wait, is this,
this person has had past sex past before?
Let's talk past.
Okay. Yeah, past. Is he just like, oh, she knows her way around. Yeah, and let
then,
me.
And then come to find out she doesn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Is that the whole of his attraction?
I don't think so, because he spends 3 years looking for her.
I think it's obsession. Mm. I think truly, again, I can't believe it wasn't nominated for cinematography. Great shot of I'm falling in love with you at first sight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just like, this is the most beautiful creature I've ever seen, and I'm obsessed with her. And then the taboo of it with her having this horrible reputation and having these, her melancholia, yes, is so, like, beyond any actual personality that she has, right? There's something about Sarah.
Obscure Melancholia would have been a better title.
Yes.
Especially because I spent the whole time going, when's the French lieutenant coming into the movie? Never.
Never. Because does he exist?
Maybe.
He kind of exists, but he never really was in her life.
Is the French lieutenant who she was supposed to be all like, well, so yes, he did exist.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what was it? She saw, but they are never together, or they were together, but she saw him with a whore.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A lady of that standard, or some way they poetically put it.
The job that
it.
I might have if I went to London.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess that's, I don't know if we ever see him. I don't think we ever see him.
But. Like Fatal Attraction, or like, I mean, I guess she did hump him in Fatal Attraction. Those like movies where it's like, I have invented a whole relationship that never existed.
Right.
But then it's great because he does that too.
Yes.
Right. She did it with the French lieutenant, and then he does it with her.
Right.
Do we like him? I'm not sure.
No, he sucks. No,
I like his servant, who's like,
Sam, what a bitch.
Sam was like, you're shitty. How about I get paid?
Right?
No, then I'm out.
Right, exactly. It's like, well done. Mm-hmm. Like, well played, sir.
Yeah.
I love Sam.
and his little girlfriend, they were a cute couple.
And then they had the actors playing together at the party.
Yeah.
I like that. I really did. The gimmick works for me.
I missed something in the middle, but I noticed at the rap party, she was trying to really like say goodbye to him. And yes. He's just like, okay, there you go. Pat, pat, pat. And she just looked so forlorn when he kind of ignored her. So was there something?
It was just, I think that was literally just to make us go like, oh, that was a movie and this is real life. And even though there are parallels between Meryl and Jeremy, that doesn't mean there's necessarily parallels between Sam, gotcha, actor and little lady actor.
Gotcha.
That's my feeling there.
Was Meryl married at this time?
Is Meryl married?
No, well, she is separated from Donald Gummer, I want to say, was her partner for many, many years, who she has several children. This would have been like right after John Cazale died, so I don't think so.
She feels very genuine, not just because she's an actor acting as an actor, but like the modern stuff feels very lived experience.
Oh, yeah.
To me. It feels like these are people who know what the intricacies of these relationships are like. And
an on-set romance.
So even if she was not yet married, she was almost married.
Mm-hmm.
So wait,
to another actor.
Who is Don Gummer?
Her ex-husband. Or I think they're still married, but they're separated.
Okay.
She's allegedly dating Martin Short, which is so cute.
Oh, that's adorable.
They say they're just friends. They don't look like they're just friends.
It says that she married Gummer in 78.
Okay, there you go. When did John Cazale die?
Nobody else is mentioned. He's the only.
Oh, they were engaged. Mentioned. Oh.
There's not much to say about this movie.
I wrote a lot of notes.
Go. I'm handing you the football.
I was not prepared to be attracted to Jeremy Irons.
I just kept hearing Scar.
Me too.
And that's case in point, Robin says. This is why.
Also, I assume you've never seen Dead Ringers.
Mm-mm.
Maintain that for your life.
I really want to.
You should absolutely watch it.
All right.
You have different feelings about bodily autonomy than most people with uteruses do.
I don't have different feelings. I have a different relationship, too.
Yes, thank you. That's a much better way of phrasing it. You know what I mean. And also, like, Dead Ringers is a great movie. I just don't think that most people should watch it.
I watched The Brood last week. We'll get into it.
Yes.
Exact same thing. I should confess that I am not, we've talked about this before, I am not the guy to ask, what do I know him from? Something about the way my brain does recall is, I don't know. It could be the most famous actor in the world. When you ask me that, I don't know. I've just trained myself to look at Wikipedia and IMDb so much that my brain does not connect those dots on its own. Mary Beth will not take this note. She just keeps asking, what do I know that person from? And I get angry and tell her to download the app. But she kept insisting, you know, what do I know Jeremy Irons from?
Jeremy Iron.
And I tried to deflect. And then I angrily described the career of Daniel Day-Lewis, which is how I know that I get those two crossed in my mind. I was like, Jeremy Irons, he played Lincoln. He was in My Left Foot. He has a million Oscars.
Oh, my God.
He has one Oscar.
Yeah. They are different people. Both strong jawlines. And but I think he's good. This was his first leading role on screen.
Really?
Well, that's very good for a first try.
Was certainly on the stage for quite some time before that, but his first leading film role was The French Lieutenant's Woman.
I thought he was quite good.
Yeah, he was good at both and managed to be compelling without ever slipping into I actually like you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point. Like, I do think this guy sucks. I still didn't get to the point of get off my screen, you asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I thought Meryl, I mean, she's Meryl, but I will say the accent seems a little dubious.
His or hers?
Hers. He uses the same
accent.
That's
his genuine accent.
Right? British, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, her Sarah accent. I was a little like.
Yeah.
It's very precise. It's very it's very vocal coached.
Which maybe was intentional, right? Because it's a movie.
Maybe.
Right?
Maybe.
Yeah. What else did I write down?
It's like I said, you're still in. Camila's answering emails. Camila's doing her grocery list.
Like, I have to pay this bill. That really bitchy lady who she works for, the actor is named Patience Collier.
Yeah, I noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, has my name. Old-timey England was full of jerks, at least according to this movie.
Oh, yes,
everyone's a dick except for Meryl. Like, there's no non-dick.
Yeah, Meryl's not a dick.
Yeah, she said she's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
It's the whole part of the whole classist thing that we're throwing in this movie.
Mm-hmm. I like when fancy period pieces are dimly lit. I like it the other way too. Like, I love that like saturated Hammer thing where it's all like clearly under stage lights. But when it's Lincoln was that way, maybe that's why I confused them in that moment. It's like, no, it wouldn't be. They wouldn't have great light in here.
Lit by an oil, like an actual oil lamp.
Yeah, well, it's very handsome. Handsome film.
Handsome film. I've never heard of film.
It's a handsome film.
It sure is. Mm-hmm. Okay, another thing I wrote in my notes. Did the Melancholia guy swear an oath on the Origin of Species?
I don't know.
He's holding the Origin of Species in his hand, and he's like, and I will tell you with the truth in my heart, this is why your girlfriend's crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. That's great. Oh, I guess I wrote down, do people really get so bent out of shape about a lady who fucks?
Apparently in 18 whatever.
Well,
what year was actually, it? I had no idea.
I feel like it still happens today. Like, yes. The answer is always yes.
I meant I know what year it was, which is 1857. Thank you. Or that's sort of what is implied to be, because she goes, did you know in 1857 that like every second house was a brothel?
Oh right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right. So, because I felt like that was another example of the modern story kind of brushing up against an opportunity and then just running away from it, right?
right?
Because, like, you are right. People still get bent out of shape about a woman who fucks, right? But I think what Meryl's actor character was going for there is, like, these people are so prudish, except for they were still people. They still fucked,
right?
Right?
Right.
So,
and there was still a need for it, and somebody was fulfilling said need out of every one out of three houses. Mm-hmm.
I like the math equation, see? Where
So, yeah, I guess I felt like this movie could have done a little bit more to wrestle with Victorian prudishness.
Yeah.
Because the story is really, like, she adopts the identity of a whore when she's a virgin.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's like Easy A.
Yes.
This is a predecessor to Easy A. Did you know if it were just a few years later, she could have fled on the tube?
What?
The London Underground opened in 1863. Oh, okay.
And said she had to take a ship like a cop.
Yeah, she could have caught the subway. A few years later.
I thought you were talking about Emma Stone.
No, talking about the character in the movie, within the movie, the French Lieutenant's Woman. It's because the fun fact I'm adapting is Jack the Ripper probably took the subway.
Oh, really?
Fun. Yeah. Hang on.
I never thought about that.
Hester Prynne did fuck the dude, right? In the Scarlet Letter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again. Air quotes smart.
Sure.
Yeah. I had to
baby. What, shouldn't she have a
There's
baby?
There's a baby. Yeah.
She had his kid.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel bad for Robin because.
What?
Because you clearly you had
so much.
And we're both like.
Yep.
I liked when they smoked the cigarette on the beach. It was cool.
Oil lamps are beautiful.
That fucking house at the end. That was my last note. This house and 7 exclamation points.
Mm-hmm.
The house where she's the governess.
Yeah.
Take me there.
Yeah, I fucking loved it. And the room where they, like, the last, that fucking bay window.
Yes.
Like, the window seats. Oh,
and, like, goodness. I don't know if you saw when he was, like, going up to it on the boat. That's the whole front of that house.
Oh my god.
Those windows.
Oh my god.
Right? Take me to that house.
Yeah, there's a part of me that I feel like I want to live in Maine for some reason.
My parents' best friends lived in Maine. We used to vacation there. Maine is beautiful.
I've never been there, but yet I just feel like when I see things like Practical Magic, when I watch movies like that, I feel like I want this Cape Cod situation.
You want a rocky shore.
Apparently.
Yeah, yes. I don't want to go on the beach. I want a beach that's not for hanging out. I want
sound and the mist.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the smell.
And I've never done any of that. Like, I've never been to one of those. I mean, Ireland is kind of like that, but yeah.
I was going to say, I feel like Ireland is super duper that.
It is, but for some reason, civilization mostly stops 5 miles from every.
Got it.
You know, it's like you have to walk for an hour to get up to the cliff to see the ocean.
I did that one time.
Yeah, that's great.
It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. I recognized, I'm not going to look up the actress's name, I'm sorry. I knew I recognized Jeremy Irons' character's modern wife.
Yeah,
from something. Who was she?
She's the mom in Shaun of the Dead.
Oh my goodness!
I know. Yep. I was looking at her like, who is this woman? Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Yes, I had the exact same, like, I'm sure I've seen you.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. She was good.
Yeah.
She was good.
She was really good for a tiny, tiny role. I know. Mm-hmm. Just like, why I know what you're doing.
Right. Why do you envy me? Yeah. I'm just kind of like, I feel like she was challenging her in that moment.
It was like fucking Beyonce Jolene.
Mm-hmm. And the Letterboxd list is, I support women's rights, but more importantly, I support women's wrongs. I don't know.
Is the story of Adele H on there?
There were so many. It got weird in a hurry. There were Barbie direct-to-video cartoons. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a good title. It's a good name of a list.
Yeah.
63. Let's say 63.
50.
I'm going to go 79.
Those are all numbers that I think if you had made me guess last week on no information what the three of us would give, I might have assumed that Camila would go underwater, but
I wanted to, but I also don't want to disrespect Meryl and Jeremy.
Yeah. 64 is the average. It's a nice movie for grown-ups. Not to get into my family, but my grandmother has been in an assisted living place for several years. She does not leave her room, and I'm angry about it because I think she would be less miserable if she did the things.
Yeah.
And one of the things at the assisted living place is the nightly movie, and I'm like, man, is this a good nightly movie at the assisted living place? And sometimes they got it wrong. There's a flyer every time I walk in, and one night it was Megan. I was like, don't show them Megan.
No,
I understand you wanted to mix in a modern one every now and then, but Megan is not the film.
No,
I know old people who like Megan. I feel like if my grandfather-in-law hasn't watched Megan yet, I'm gonna make him watch Megan.
Right. I don't know, because I feel like they have a tendency, and not that I have that much experience with these assisted living places, but I feel like they have a tendency to infantilize.
They do.
And so like you show them Megan and somebody brings them a doll, like, I don't know, I just feel like, you know, we're playing with matches.
To the bingo card. We had a spirited debate before recording began. No one kissed in literal rain. There was probably
bullshit.
Some mist, some dreek, some
yes,
wet conditions, but no rain.
I just call bullshit on the whole production. Job
right.
or career in title, even though the job or career is not in the movie.
And
Lieutenant.
And bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Yay!
I have a bingo. I got my veto back. Thank you.
I feel more safe also.
I'm not going to use it this week. I think we made that a rule at some point. It cannot be an immediate.
Yes, that's correct.
We hold off.
But you still have one, right, Camila?
I think.
Yeah, you vetoed whatever to get to
I
something
vetoed
about married.
First to get to Beyonce.
First to
Let's
get to
not
Beyonce.
Forget.
We keep. Have we checked?
No. Every episode we need to be like, can we watch Beyonce instead?
For the listener, at one point we drew a Renaissance, a film by Beyonce, which is not yet available on any home media, and it is still not.
All right. Well, someday.
Mm-hmm.
I vetoed The Maze Runner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stand by it.
I stand by vetoing Valentine's Day to get to whatever we got to, but I'm way too quick to be like, that's not fun. Veto.
Yes.
You gotta save them.
I mean,
for...
we are the people who decided we would do a show where things were randomly assigned to
exactly.
us.
Right.
Exactly.
Oh, speaking of Tony keeping us relevant, at some point she's like, our affair lasted a fortnight.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, I've been hearing that on the radio.
Yes, congratulations to Robin for being the first one of us to have a Taylor Swift song of her name.
Mm-hmm.
Big week for you.
I can't tell you how many messages were on my phone when I woke up that morning?
Mm-hmm.
One from Sean.
What is the name of the song?
Robin. Do the Swifties have theories? Is that about someone in particular?
Is it about you?
Well, yes, it is about me because like the lyrics are like, look at this asshole. And I've heard also that it might be about her cats.
I hope so.
She talks about tigers a lot. It's fine.
I hope it's about her cats.
I like the album a lot. While acknowledging that if you give it a mediocre review, most of the mediocre reviews have legitimate reasons. And yeah, a lot of the time, if you put out a 31 song album, there's filler. There was a perfect 14 song album waiting to get out.
Yeah.
Especially if you're Taylor Swift and you can drop B-sides any old time and people will eat them up. Like, just give us the gold and save the other stuff for bonus tracks later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't listen to Taylor Swift.
Somehow my number one on Spotify last year. Didn't even notice.
What?
I was gobsmacked, and I was like, what do you mean Taylor Swift is number one on my Spotify Wrapped? And then did I say Spotify?
Yes.
Yeah.
On my Spotify. And then I thought back and I was like, oh yeah, I listen to Taylor Swift all the time now. It's just, she sneaks in.
Yeah.
She sneaks in. She takes over. You don't have to try. She'll just be there.
I've definitely been surprised. The year Black Panther came out, Kendrick Lamar was my top one, and I would have written down 40 different artist names before his.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I just listened to that soundtrack so much.
Yeah. Well, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Robin, go ahead, because I need to update my Letterboxd.
So I have been a terrible combination of busy and depressed, so I haven't watched a ton of new movies, but I did watch the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries Dune and the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries Children of Dune. And these are from the early aughts, and they are as expensive as the Sci-Fi Channel could make something in the early aughts, which is extremely not, but they rule. I mean, here's the thing. The guy who plays Paul is a charisma void, and that is a problem. So Dune is not nearly as good as Children of Dune, which stars tiny baby Twinkie James McAvoy. And I am always a little bit on the fence about him. Like, I like him in some things, but I'm always like, I don't know why there are people who love him. Not anymore. Now I know why there are people who love him.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he's great.
Oh, he's fantastic.
So, yeah, if you're a burgeoning Dune nerd like me, seek out these miniseries and watch them.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
But you're looking forward to Challengers?
Obviously, I'm looking forward to Zendaya fucks two dudes.
What is this movie about?
She Zendaya fucks two dudes.
That's it. Okay. At the same time?
It's
tennis,
but the tennis is really sex, and the sex is really tennis.
The cover look like GTA characters?
Just to make it marketable.
What's GTA?
Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, yeah. I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah. I saw Challengers on Monday, and I like it a whole lot, partially because the is this art or is this tawdry trash thing is like both, and fuck you for asking. Like, it's so perfectly like
this is Luca Guadagnino, right?
Yeah.
So that's his wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He knows how to handle it. What I was going to say earlier was I talked to fellow Pittsburgh Film Critics Association member Matt Bullions on the way out about how it's a movie for grownups and about how weird it is that there are movies for grownups featuring people who probably are 15 years younger than me and look 25 years younger. Yeah. Yeah. They look like babies.
Yeah.
And it's such a grown-up movie.
They are grown-ups.
Because they are grown-ups. We had this conversation when Malcolm and Marie came out, and it's like Zendaya is an adult woman. That is sometimes hard to accept. No, it's good.
How was
it's
the guy
sexy.
From West Side Story?
He's really good. First of all, he plays straighter than he played in West Side Story when he was also supposed to be straight.
Really?
And he really nails the, like, what other way to say it is there but topping from the bottom aspect of this character. Like, he's the beta, in heavy air quotes, who ends up in control for most of the time. You know, it's just, it's, there's so much rhythm in this movie. Like, there's so many times.
It's Dennis.
Right.
And sex.
And Trent Reznor score. Like, nice. there's so much, like, where they just start this pulsing thing, and it's like, oh, this is all about rhythm. Kept saying in my review, it's about intimacy, because I can't just say it's about fucking on Pittsburgh Magazine. No, it's good. Go see it. Go on a date. Come home happy and ready to go. Ready to play tennis. I have seen a bunch, because last night I saw Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic. Nope. A little earlier I said notes. I know that we never need the musician biopic, and I know that there's always a better documentary, but when the better documentary is relatively recent, one best picture, made a lot of money. This wasn't a thing that people saw on Netflix. It made a lot of money in the theater.
It was a hit documentary.
Yeah.
And it's about someone whose career was almost entirely confined to the 21st century, so it was all already on film.
Yeah. Right.
We already have... This movie spent so many times recreating scenes that we saw the real thing of in that movie.
Right. Yeah.
I know not when she's in the hotel room with Blake, but like when you're like, when we're doing the whole Grammy performance, it's like, yeah, I saw that in the other movie. For real.
Like, yeah, I saw that on the Grammy. When I watched the Grammy.
Yeah.
It's just not very good. The performers are excellent. And it's a relative unknown named Marisa Abela, who was in Barbie. She was one of the stray Barbies. But she both looks enough like Amy Winehouse, sings enough like Amy Winehouse, and acts very, very well, which is very impressive. The rest of the cast is good, too. The script is terrible. It just never... It feels like it was written in not even a long weekend. Like, you started on Friday night.
48-hour film project.
Yeah. Mm. It and never settles on, is this movie... Are we saying that the defining thing was this doomed romance? Are we saying... It really...
I hope not.
It kind of does.
Don't like that.
It's not, it's very forgiving to her family, which I think is conscious because the documentary wasn't and it pissed them off. So then they backed this. Don't bother with that.
Yep, nope.
Finally saw Immaculate. Good for her.
Good for her.
It's good. Yeah, it is what everybody's saying.
I mean, I feel like it's a Sean movie, if anything.
Yeah, it's the ending is great and everything leading up is pretty good. It is a much better non-Demon Child movie than The First Omen, which I also saw this week and had its moments, but was just overstuffed and unnecessary. You know, it's a prequel, which always feels unnecessary, but... There were a few moments in The First Omen that are really great and really shocking and just a lot of filler in between. Immaculate doesn't have filler.
I think a lot of times what they're ignoring where horror is, I think, most often these days is that the best villains don't necessarily need a backstory.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to really know who, what, and why this person is the way they are. This, like what their villain story is, really.
Cut in Billy Loomis's speech.
Right.
Never really find out why Hannibal Lecter liked to eat people.
Nope. And so it's just, I think that adds to the horror.
Yeah.
And like for example, like the strangers, like they're doing like a explanatory kind of movie with this. And there's, I think it's going to be three parts. Like they're going all in, like they're redoing the first one. It's just a mess. The beauty of that first one, why that first one, every time I watch it, it just terrifies me to the bone, is because we don't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Those people never take their masks off. They never give you a reason why they're doing it, because you were home.
Yeah.
That was the reason. And that's fucking terrifying to think something like that. And so now they're going to like really do a deep dive into it. I think that's just something like that we're not thinking about anymore where horror is concerned.
I gotta rewatch The Strangers, because it didn't really land for me when I first saw it.
Really?
I think because I was at the drive-in. And so I'm like, I'm just outside. There's all kind of people around.
I'm not isolated.
That's fine.
One of the very few horror movies I cannot watch by myself at night.
I've never seen that movie. Just that gif makes me feel the chills when you mention it.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah!
Yeah.
And I probably will never see that movie because I don't want to feel that way.
Yeah, I don't think you should, Robin. Yes.
I also watched Cronenberg's The Brood. I shouldn't have done that impulsively on a neutral night. It was like a Wednesday at 9 o'clock. I was like, I'll watch The Brood. And I eventually started taking pictures of the shocked and confused faces I was making.
Where do we get to see those? I don't know. Like,
I'll share privately. They're not like flattering.
Have you seen The Brood, Camila?
No.
Okay.
I
don't think you should.
I'm not Cronenberg. Cronenberg is, I'm not the...
Okay.
It's.
I'm not the audience.
I weirdly like Cronenberg, even though I shouldn't. There's no reason I should. He gets some kind of Canadian pass for me.
Mm-hmm. An hour of that movie is like perfect. Like, I'm ramping up and getting into this. Oh, man, it's spooky. And there's little weird monsters hitting people with heavy things. It's great. Oh, the cinematography. And then you get me ramped up, like going up the roller coaster track. And then there's no track at the top of the hill because we are plunging straight into, oh, my God, no.
That's so true.
No. It's 9 out of 10. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm never looking at it again under any circumstances. Camila?
Speaking of that type of thing, I didn't really watch any movies per se. I mean, I rewatched something that I'd seen like ages ago. Something New still holds up. Love that movie, Sanaa Lathan.
Oh my god, I love that movie.
Love it so much. And
who's the white boy in that movie?
Simon something. I want to say he was on The Mentalist.
That's the one.
Yeah,
and he was in LA Confidential.
Was he? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but it still holds up.
Oh my god, I love that movie.
It's so good. But I watched the limited series on Netflix, Baby Reindeer.
Oh, I keep hearing things about this.
Take your time. In your own time.
Like Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
It is very well done. Mm-hmm. It is well written. It is well performed. It is well directed. Like, as television, as media, as something to consume, yes, it is. Everybody did their jobs exceptionally well. However, I would like to put just a disclaimer out there. Episode 4 is a real fucking trigger warning. Like,
okay.
Like, for real, for real. I, myself, have never been a victim of sexual violence. Thank God.
God bless. Yes.
I was fucked up for, like, 2 days. I had to stop production altogether for, like, 2 days. I couldn't go back to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was necessary. The story that they were telling, it was very necessary, but it's just, if you are like highly sensitive about things like that, you skip episode 4, look to see what happens in it, and then move on to the other episodes, because that shit was rough. And I also kind of left, and I know it's a true story and everything, and I think the guy who plays himself, and I think that's what it is. We get to the end, and I kind of hate everybody that's involved. There are a lot of choices that were made that I do not agree with personally, and and I can't step foot in his life and know why and what, but it just, I felt like that's not how that goes. So, but it's absolutely worth a watch. And again, if you're very sensitive to things, skip episode 4.
Let me ask you both. Well, first, are either of you attending the Steel City Spook Show on Sunday night?
No, what is that?
That's my thing.
Oh, sorry.
You're probably invited to it. I'm doing a mystery movie series at the Harris Theater.
Fun. Yeah.
If you're hearing this, that the one I'm talking about has already passed, but we've got another one coming up at least for the next few months. It'll be the last Sunday of every month. If you're in Pittsburgh at the Harris Theater, the Steel City Spook Show, myself and my co-host, the mysterious Dr. Gielgud, with an evening of surprise guests, in theater scares, mystery movie. I was about to say and more, but that's pretty much it. It's those three things. Special guests.
That's plenty.
Live hosting. Maybe there'll be a prize sometime. I don't know. Come down. It's going to be a good time. You get a mystery movie, much like we get every week.
Yay!
Let's draw every week.
Look at that beautiful transition.
I still say every week as if we do an episode every week.
That
was 1 year in the pandemic we did every week. I just hope we leave 1981.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, it went so much farther back to hit Thoroughly Modern Millie.
What the fuck is that?
Robin? It's a musical?
It's a musical? I think somebody got nominated for an Oscar for it, so something for me to check off on my spreadsheet.
Thoroughly Modern Millie. Julie Andrews, Mary Tyler Moore, Carol Channing.
Carol Channing got nominated.
I don't want to. I veto.
Exercise my veto, man.
All right.
I don't want to do this.
I would be like, now we were just saying.
I know.
You don't veto just because it's not fun. Then I saw that it's 2 hours and 33 minutes long. And you know what? Not today.
Yeah. Also, I mean, we're just coming off this French Lieutenant bit. Like,
I get it.
Had this been placed somewhere else, maybe. But
you want something a little less fancy. You want something, for regular folks.
Ready Player One cinema.
So you get the unvetoable.
Make me regret this.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
All right.
The first one.
Is The Curse of the Black Pearl the first one?
I think so.
Then yes, the first one.
Okay. Yay! Listen, Johnny Depp, garbage. That movie, great.
Super fun.
Yes.
Super fun. Love that movie.
It feels like when that came out, that was one of the last, moments. One of the last in theater we're all going moments for a long time.
It really, that was
until Avengers Endgame or an Infinity War. And
I felt like Pirates of the Caribbean was a big, instant word of mouth thing. Like, I think people were like, it is so fucking stupid that they're making a movie based on this, forgettable theme park ride, and then
forgettable. Excuse me,
Disney adult Sean Collier. Perfect.
I didn't even know it was
theme park.
I didn't know it was a theme park ride at the time. I was. It was like
also
Johnny
ride
Depp.
Is generous
or attraction, or
right?
Whatever.
It's like. Is it one of the floaty ones?
Yeah, it's one of the floaty ones. You float through the pirate town and all the pirates are doing things and the smells and the sound of the water. I'll wear my t-shirt. My t-shirt is for the ride, not the movie. Anyway.
Regardless, I do remember people being like, no, but actually it's good. Right? Like it came out, people are like, this is so stupid. And then they very quickly were like, okay, it's stupid, but it's good.
And it's the only time it worked. Yeah. They keep trying. They've tried Haunted Mansion more than once. They keep like, can't we turn this recognizable IP that lots of people have feelings for? And it only ever worked this time. Yeah. But it worked. That's like a multi-billion dollar franchise. Yeah. That, how do you not?
All right. Well, I'm glad we're going to,
And it's on Disney.
This is a major corner of the 21st century Nomias that we have not yet.
Yeah, we haven't done any of these, have we?
No.
Hooray.
And it is the first one. Thank goodness.
And it's on Disney
Plus.
Also,
thank goodness.
Yay. We don't have to pay for it.
Fantastic. Hooray. Loving, loving every minute of it.
This is amazing.
Except for Johnny Depp's face. Except for he's so good.
I know. No, he sucks. because there was a time when, yes, it was yay, Johnny Depp. Yep. And then he had to go fuck it up. And
we'll deal with this more fully next week, but this is the absolute peak of his powers.
Oh, this is the best thing he ever did.
It so hits his sweet spot of, you know, I can go way over the top appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You know? That's for the next one. This is the one about
also,
the
A
French
plus veto, Camila.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. That was
big
a good
step
one.
In the right
you
direction.
You followed your heart correctly.
We're so excited. We're already converting this episode into that episode. Right. We're not yet on the Pirates episode. We're here to talk about the French Lieutenant's
song.
Woman. Which hit number one on October 18th, 1981. What was the number one song in America?
Betty Davis. Davis.
Not still Betty Davis.
It is still Betty Davis.
No, it's not.
Endless Love.
No.
Okay. Now we have to actually work for it.
1881. Rod Stewart?
Mm-mm.
Physical?
While this artist is very big in my heart, and certainly was very big for a brief window of time, it's not, you know, an icon on the level of Rod Stewart.
Ray Parker Jr.?
No, a little
Kenny,
early.
Kenny Rogers.
Is it Arthur's theme?
It's Arthur's yes. theme. It's Arthur's theme, parentheses, Best That You Can Do by Christopher Cross. I really got to go see him.
Love Christopher Cross.
He tours constantly. He's always on the road, including here, this will tie it in a bow. We were at Disney World. We were at Epcot Center. And the one time I've been to Food and Wine, everyone goes nuts for Food and Wine at Epcot Center. And one thing I didn't know about Food and Wine is there's a band every day. And it's not like, you know, the Disney Main Street Singers. Like, there's a band every day.
Huh.
And I'm looking at, I pull it up on the website and I'm looking up at the lineup. And I think it's Christopher Cross. I think Christopher Cross is going to be part of my Disney experience. And then I look a little closer. And I have the days wrong. And it's not Christopher Cross. It's Hoobastank. That is a big step
that's
down.
That's a big difference.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So I've seen Hoobastank. That's.
You saw Hoobastank?
At Food and Wine at Epcot Center.
They were there.
Those words don't go together in the same sentence.
I'm enjoying my food and wine with Hoobastank.